Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep.
Part 6. Mercedes came in to say goodnight at about 5 p.m., but Andrew was still busy with the accounting books. She gave him a hug from behind, closed the office curtains, and left, calling over her shoulder that he should remember to eat something and not stay there all night. Andrew couldn't help it. He was fascinated by Jim's incredible scheme. Mercedes had obviously been in on some of it, but the more he studied the books, the more it became clear that Jim had to be not just wealthy, but filthy rich. The stocks alone were worth a fortune. The money squirreled away in the Ginger Corrigan Foundation's multiple accounts, both in the U.S. and offshore. There was even a Swiss bank account, made to be anonymous and accessible with a code word in case Jim would need to go underground and start all over again. Everything spoke of careful planning over decades. And yet, there were hardly any expenses. Jim didn't own vacation homes. He didn't gamble or keep racehorses. He lived his life in his San Francisco house, paid all their salaries and provided food and snacks, but nothing extravagant. Andrew could tell that, if Jim had wanted to, they could have run their office out of the finest hotels and eaten nothing but caviar for the rest of their lives without it making a serious dent in his finances. "What are you reading?" Andrew looked up, startled by the voice. Rhea stood in the doorway, wearing jeans and a top instead of her black outfit. In her hands were two brown paper bags which smelled delicious. He hadn't heard the door, so he assumed she had teleported in. "Just the company accounting books." Andrew closed the book, careful to move slowly and casually. He didn't know how much Jim had told Rhea, and he didn't want to be the one giving anything away. "I'm familiarizing myself with some of the other aspects of the company. Jim and I had words about the management style, and now we're in agreement that I'm a full partner."
"Good for you.
Speaking of the handsome detective, where is he? I was hoping we could catch a little dinner."
"He hasn't come back yet."
Andrew looked at his watch.
"Cripes, it's actually pretty late. Let me give him a call and see where he is."
Andrew took out his cell phone, pushed Jim's number, and waited while it rang at the other end. After 5 rings, it went to voicemail. He tried again, with the same result.
"Odd. According to Mercedes, he was just down south of the city. I can't see him being at a cell range."
"He's probably fine. Maybe he and Matt stopped to get something to eat on the way home and he left his cell in the car. He does that a lot."
"I take it you guys never installed tracker apps on your phones,"
Rhea said, putting the bags on the desk and slumping in one of the chairs in front of the desk.
"We could find out where he was easily."
"Jim doesn't do apps. In fact, him having a cell phone is a bit of a miracle. When I met him, he was strictly a landline kind of guy."
Andrew sniffed the bag. "What do you have there?"
"Meatball subs. I figured I'd try the whole be a good girlfriend thing and bring him dinner at the office."
Andrew's stomach made a growling sound, and he blushed.
"Sorry, haven't eaten all day. I've been too busy."
Rhea laughed.
"Help yourself, then. Since he's not here, it's going to get cold if it's not eaten. I can pop down for another when he gets here. It's literally just a jump away. if you're me. Andrew took one of the bags and opened it with a grateful smile, pulling out a large sub.
Thanks. I don't eat stuff like this very often. I'm trying to cut down on meat. Feline used to tell me to eat more fish, so...
I don't do a lot of meat either, but Jim's mostly a steak, ketchup, and potatoes man, so I figured meatballs was a safe bet.
Andrew bit down on the sandwich while Rhea looked around the room.
Tell you what, she said. I'm going to pop up and use his shower. I figure I'll wait around in case he comes home. That's the girlfriend thing to do, wouldn't you say?
I think he'll be happy to see you. I know I tease him a lot, but you guys are great together. Anyway, you know where everything is,
Andrew said.
I'll finish this and then just head home. And since you're teleporting, you don't even have to worry about locking the door if you get tired of waiting and want to leave.
It's one of the perks.
Rhea got to her feet.
There are some fries in there, too. Just save some for me, okay?
Leave the bag on the desk. I'll come down for it later.
Will do.
Rhea walked up the stairs, turning the lights on as she did, and entered Jim's bedroom, which connected to his bathroom. Around the corner, inside a parked van, the man in the driver's seat turned his head.
Hey, his bedroom lights are on.
The man in the passenger seat leaned forward and craned his neck.
His car's not there, though.
Maybe one of the other detectives took it. It was gone when we came back from the briefing. We know the secretary left, and the guy with the motorcycle is the only other person we saw enter. It has to be him.
Can you get a look through the curtains?
The first man asked.
Can you see him in there?
The second pulled a small pair of binoculars out, focusing on the bedroom window.
No, the curtains are drawn.
Damn, but it has to be him. Who else would hang out in his bedroom? I say we go for it. The motorcycle guy is just collateral damage.
Okay.
The driver turned around and opened the small sliding panel in the wall between the front of the van and the cargo hold in the back.
You guys ready?
Several voices acknowledged that they were.
All right, let's go kick some immortal ass. We go in 3 minutes from the mark. Remember, don't try to take him alive. Maurice wants him dead. Ready? Mark!
The back doors opened, and six men ran across Market Street, spreading out in a fan-like motion. Two of them went to the back of the house, while the four others remained at the front. The driver, who was the only one left in the van now, leaned back in his seat and held the wheel with both hands. The two vampires who circled around the back of the house moved quickly over the wall surrounding Jim's backyard. Overlooking the house, they could see the bedroom windows, as well as the bathroom's frosted window, being lit. Both vampires jumped up on the ledges of the house, scampering up to the windows and holding their position while counting the seconds until the 3-minute mark. Inside the bathroom, they could hear water splashing in the shower. They looked at each other, edging closer to the window. It was a double-pane glass, and they could see it would have to be kicked in. They knew they would have to be fast, but with quick and decisive action, and Corrigan obviously in the shower, they hoped to preserve the element of surprise long enough to take him out. They had both counted seconds, but one of them held up his hand with 5 fingers spread. 4, 3, 2. Rhea soaped up her upper body with Jim's loofah and stepped back under the shower head, rinsing the soap off again. She liked his shower, since it had far better water pressure than the one in the Convergence Club, and she had taken advantage of it several times. Despite the fact that Jim wasn't home, she was in a good mood. She could curl up on his couch, watch TV, or read one of the odd books he kept in his office, and wait for him to come home. When he did, he would feel special that she had waited for him, she thought. It was a good step back towards the relationship they had been building up to before her departure.
He told me he loved me,
she thought, as she scrubbed the last bit of soap off and stuck her head under the shower head to soak her hair.
He actually did. How many people have told me that they loved me? Not a lot, that's for sure. I really think...
Her thoughts were interrupted by a crash, almost musical in nature, as the window to the bathroom exploded inwards. She couldn't see anything. The shower was enclosed on all sides by glass panels with frosted glass. But through the water running into her eyes, she could sense that someone was leaping through the window and into the room. She quickly pulled her head away from the water, blinking furiously to get the water out of her eyes. A shadow moved on the other side of the glass, and a hand grabbed the sliding panel, ripping it open. A man stood there, looking momentarily as surprised as she felt. His mouth opened, either wanting to speak or just gaping in shock, and she noticed in a flash the two pointed fangs sticking out from his upper palate. Vampire. Rhea reacted without thinking, purely on instinct. She reached out with her powers and pushed. The vampire flew backward like a rag doll, hitting the wall and sending Jim's bathroom cabinet and mirror tumbling to the floor. Behind him, another man was swinging in through the window, and from downstairs, she heard a loud crash that she figured came from the lobby.
"How did you get in here?"
the second man asked in a curious voice that didn't at all fit with his black commando outfit and the machete held in his right hand. He also didn't wait to find out, but moved forward in a practiced knife-fighting move, coming at her. Rhea had nowhere to go, surrounded by glass on three sides, so she did the only thing she could do, block. Focusing her mind on the panes of glass in the shower, she ripped one of them loose with her power. It required practically no effort at all, and somewhere inside, she was still surprised at the ease with which she now used her telekinetic powers. The glass pane flew up in the air, creating an obstacle that the knife man bashed straight into. He gave a surprised cry as his face smacked against the glass, which got a large, circle-shaped crack in it. He pulled back his face, unaffected by the gash in his forehead, and Rhea noticed that there was no blood on the glass. "How do I hurt them if they're already dead?" she asked herself, and a voice in her mind, a cold, calculating voice that she didn't much care for, spoke up. "If they're already dead, you don't have to worry about killing them, do you?" There was an unmistakable logic to the voice's words, and she flexed her mental muscles. Just as the vampire raised a hand to his head as if to prove nothing was wrong, she tipped the floating glass panel 90 degrees so it was horizontal and propelled it forward with the same kind of force she had used in Las Vegas. An executioner with an axe in hand could not have done a more precise job. The glass cut through the vampire's neck like a knife through butter and shattered against the wall behind him. The head was cut clean off, falling to the floor with a soft thud, followed by the body crumbling on top of it. Downstairs, she heard two gunshots, then the sound of many running feet beginning to climb the stairs, and another shot. The vampire she had thrown against the wall rose to his feet and watched her with a mixture of surprise and anger.
"It takes more than hitting a wall to stop me," he said.
Rhea tilted her head to one side.
"Okay. Noted."
Andrew's reflexes had been honed by his time in the FBI, and the time he had worked for Jim hadn't dulled them in the slightest. He heard a crashing sound from upstairs, and a moment later something hit the front door hard, shattering the glass panes in it. But before the door slammed back against the wall, he was on his feet and reaching for his gun. He heard several people rush into the lobby and quickly calculated his options. The desk was large, heavy, and provided cover, but if he stayed behind it, he would be pinned down and trapped. He could hear footsteps approaching the office door, but only from the front. None were coming from the other door, which led to the back corridor, the kitchen, and the stairs. He decided that high ground was infinitely better and moved with quick steps to the door in the back wall,
just as the lobby door to the office was kicked in with such force that the door frame splintered. Two men moved through the door in a coordinated move that made Andrew think of trained soldiers in combat. They were armed with long, nasty-looking knives, and each also had a holstered gun on his chest in a quick-draw holster. They were dressed in identical black outfits, but had no masks on. Andrew fired twice, aiming high as he had been trained to do in combat scenarios. One bullet missed and hit the doorframe. The other struck the man on the right side in the face. He fell backward like he'd been kicked by a horse. Behind him, Andrew could sense that more people were coming and ran through the other door, slamming it behind him. He knew he only had seconds before they would follow him through the door, as well as come through the door connecting the lobby with the corridor. Above him, he heard a crashing sound and realized that Rhea might also be in trouble. He sprinted up the stairs as both doors behind him slammed open and the attackers pursued him. He could feel his heart pounding in his chest as he took the stairs two steps at a time, felt his feet sliding on the old carpet runner, but kept his balance. The stairs were narrow and steep, giving him the advantage when the men behind him had to run up single file, their pounding footsteps making the stairs vibrate under him. He turned and fired again, hitting the first man in the chest. This, however, had much less of an effect than he had expected, since the man only staggered a bit on his feet instead of keeling over. Andrew saw their pale faces, their exposed teeth, and put two and two together. He didn't know why, but he was being attacked by a vampire commando group. Bullets would have very little impact unless he could shoot well enough to rip the head clean off, and even his Glock might have problems with that. At the top of the stairs, Andrew bolted for Jim's bedroom, behind which he could also hear crashing sounds. He only made it two steps into the bedroom before a body was propelled through the wall to the bathroom with incredible force. Splinters of wood and plaster flew everywhere, and the body tumbled through the air before finally hitting the wall head first. It slid down and came to rest on the floor, resting against the outer wall. Jim's house was made primarily of wood, but it was clear that the trip through the wall had not been painless for the unfortunate attacker.
"Rhea!"
Andrew shouted, coughing in the plaster dust. But the pause he had taken in surprise had allowed the men behind him to catch up with him. Andrew felt a strong arm grab him from behind and saw the blade of the knife swing out in a slashing motion that would, in a moment, thrust it into his stomach. He raised his arm, using an old trick his instructor had taught him in the academy to shift the balance of the attacker, twisted his torso, and threw the vampire over his head in a judo move that made the knife miss his stomach by inches. However, the vampire was prepared for his defense, and instead of being thrown down on his back, landed on his feet and turned to face Andrew. Two hands grabbed Andrew's shirt and pushed him out of balance, making him stagger back toward the bed. In the door to the bathroom, Rhea appeared, wrapping a bath towel around herself. Her wet hair clung to her face and neck, and her eyes were cold and dark. She held up one hand, palm out toward the vampires, who now had all filed into the room and stood only a few feet away. There were four of them, Andrew saw, including the one that had come through the wall and who was slowly getting to his feet. The one he had gotten in the face was apparently no longer in the game.
"Stop! Don't touch him!"
Rhea's voice was commanding and confident.
"We're here for Corrigan,"
one of the vampires said. He tilted his head in a movement that was almost rat-like. His fangs gleamed as he opened his mouth at them.
"Where is he?"
"Busy,"
Rhea said in an almost conversational tone.
"Can we take a message?"
She kept her hand raised, and it was clear that the vampires didn't know what to make of her. Even in her undressed appearance, power radiated from her in almost visible waves. Andrew could feel it in the air, like a large machine running hot and making the air vibrate. The vampire that had been thrown through the wall rolled onto his back and got to his feet. He looked shaken, but still fully capable of fighting. They all looked at each other, obviously not expecting Jim to not be home.
"She must be Corrigan's woman," one of them said. "We could turn her as a message to him."
"Where's Kolchak?" another asked, trying to crane his neck to look in the bathroom. He appeared to be the leader.
"He's ahead. If you don't want to follow him, I suggest you leave now," Rhea said. Andrew took a quick two steps to get behind her and into the bathroom door. Despite having missed the cataclysmic battle in Las Vegas, Jim's retelling made him feel severely outgunned, and he preferred to stay out of her line of fire.
"She's bluffing! Take her!"
the lead vampire said. The group moved in a coordinated movement, coming at Rhea from three sides. She reached out with her mind, knowing that Jim would never let her hear the end of this. The vampires had very little warning before the large wardrobe by the wall lifted up from the floor and flew at them like an attacking monster. The impact hit two of the vampires, literally smashing them against the wall, which was in no way built for that kind of force. The wardrobe and the two screaming vampires were blasted through the wall, flying into the night, and with a splintering, crashing sound, landed in the side yard. Jim's clothes flew through the air like strangely shaped birds, before falling down and covering the ground with shirts, socks, and pants. The two remaining vampires, including the leader, froze immediately. Andrew's mouth fell wide open as well. He stared at Rhea with an expression of awe. The leader turned around, running for the door and the stairs. He moved faster than a normal human, using some of his vampire power, Rhea would guess. No speed he could achieve, however, compared to the speed of her thoughts. She grabbed him with her mind and lifted him off his feet, holding him suspended about a foot off the floor. The vampire turned slowly in the air until he faced her again. Rhea gritted her teeth.
"You came here looking for Jim. Who sent you here?"
"Maurice,"
the leader said.
"The regent,"
the other vampire offered. Both looked like they didn't know what to do.
"Perhaps you should tell Maurice and the regent that Jim has powerful friends as well. Friends who don't enjoy being disturbed in the shower and who don't want him to get hurt either. Am I making myself clear?"
Rhea said, looking from one to the other. Both of the vampires opened their mouths to speak, but Rhea held up one finger.
"Actually, I guess I don't need two people sending that message, do I, Andrew? I could just rip the head off one of you and send the other off."
Andrew looked like he considered it for a moment before shaking his head.
"You've already busted Jim's bedroom up pretty good. Don't you think he'll be even more upset to have to rinse one of these clowns' bits and pieces out of his carpet? And I mean, you know what he's like when he gets mad. He just tends to kill people left and right."
"Good point."
Rhea made a gesture with her right hand, letting go of the leader and dropping him to the floor.
"Get the hell out of here."
The two vampires quickly ran for the stairs, and they heard their footsteps run through the downstairs lobby before fleeing the house. Andrew looked out of the hole in the wall, trying to get an idea of the destruction down below. The wardrobe lay smashed on the ground, but there was no sight of either vampire. Either they had fled the scene, or they were lying beneath the heavy wardrobe. Andrew was betting on the latter. The force she had used to send them through the wall had looked enormous. Rhea stood tall until the footsteps had vanished downstairs, and then sat down on the bed, making the duvet lift up and drape itself around her. She was shaking, and Andrew knelt down in front of her.
Are you okay? He asked. Fine, just feeling a bit weird. Using my powers like this, offensively, is still a bit strange for me. On a side note, there's a guy without a head in the bathroom and a giant hole in the wall. We might have to call the cops, and I'm not sure what to say to them.
Me neither. I know Jim's friend used to cover for him, but I'm not completely sure how it works with the guys who took over after Inspector Charles died.
Of all the nights for Jim to be gone!
Rhea got up and waved a hand, making the clothes she had taken off in the bathroom fly to her and hover in midair.
Could you turn your back, please?
She said. Andrew did so, while she dropped the towel, quickly dried herself off, and slipped into her clothes.
What do we do about the wall?
Good question. I'm not sure if I know any carpenters who do late-night fixes like this. Maybe we just need to fix it ourselves after the cops get here. He hesitated.
Do you need a hug or something?
I'm afraid to just give you one, in case you send me out the window. Rhea put on her jacket and gave him her old, crooked smile.
I think I'm good. If you need a hug, you can just say so.
Andrew put one hand around her shoulder.
Come on. Let's call the boys in blue. Oh, and just so you're prepared, there might be another dead guy. Well, a vampire, downstairs. Unless he can walk away from a Glock to the face.